Hey, it's Scott Petrick with another episode of the Brown Zone Zone Coverage Podcast. Many of the Browns players returned to Berea this week for the start of the offseason program. At the same time, the front office prepared for the NFL draft, which starts Thursday. Deshaun Watson, Denzel Ward, Greg Newsom II, Kevin Stefanski, and Andrew Berry talked to reporters throughout the week to give April updates. Here to discuss, once again, is Dave Chudowski of GO, the WKYC Morning News. What's going on, Chud?
Scott, how are you? Is it feel like you're back in school? Is that kind of the feeling I heard Stefanski talking about with you guys, like the first day of school?
There is a little bit of that. And, you know, I mean, we talk about it all the time, right? There's always Brown stuff going on. You know, I'm always talking to other beat writers throughout the entire year. But this is different. I haven't been to Berea since, I don't know, probably January 15th, 16th. Right. So it's 3 months later. It is like you're kind of returning to school. Get to see everybody, get to see the guys at the podium, check out the new building. And I got a new 2024 media credential to get me in Berea.
Well, there you go. Do you have a new picture? Is it like the same one from 15 years ago?
Actually, this one, it does not have a picture. It just has my name on it.
Oh, okay. Just your name.
Yeah.
Did you get that like sick Sunday feeling, you know, you get as a kid, like when 60 minutes, tick, tick, tick comes on and you're like, oh, back to school. Did you have that feeling?
Yeah. I mean, obviously I enjoy what I do, but
right.
But when you walk back into the building, there's a little bit about, there is a little pit in your stomach, perhaps.
Oh yeah. I know the feeling. Well, so yeah, I mean, big interviews this week. I mean, you have Deshaun Watson, Stefanski, and Berry. So, I mean, listen, Stefanski talks all the time, right? But still, that's where you guys get a lot of your info. Andrew Berry, when you get him, that's always good for you to get the latest info. I feel I listened to most of them in their entirety, I think. I feel like, let me know what you think, all right? This is how I feel about, and we're going to get into each individual one, and we'll break down certain topics. But I felt like Berry never is going to give you what he doesn't want to give you, but I do feel like he gave you a couple nuggets that were decent.
Okay.
Stefanski was pretty, maybe one or two things, but overall, you know, not a lot. And then Watson, I felt there was kind of a couple interesting things there. But at the same time, I got to tell you, it's tough listening to him talk from beginning to end for a full interview. Thoughts?
I love it. I love that. I love that analysis, Chud. I tend to agree with you on a lot of that. Kevin Stefanski is so good at not telling us anything, right? And he says words, but there's not a whole lot there on purpose, right? You're not getting injury updates. You're just not getting a ton from Stefanski. And you're right. You know, Andrew Berry has gotten better in his interviews. You know, there's not a ton of information, but he'll talk big picture stuff. He'll talk philosophy stuff. It's always good to hear from the GM. You know, it's probably only a handful of times a year, maybe a little bit more than that. To me, Deshaun Watson was the newsiest. You know, I talked to him with a couple other reporters when he opened that restaurant a couple weeks ago, but this is the time to follow up. This is more, you know, this is all about football, but pretty much all about football. And we could delve in a little deeper. And I think we got some clarity on, a little bit of clarity on the update from the shoulder surgery. Then we had some uncertainty about if and what or when he's going to practice again. And then we had some confusion about when the shoulder actually broke, right? When he had the broken glenoid bone, the socket in the shoulder. So just real quick to take you through that, he said he's throwing it at full speed. Because I asked him, I said, are you able to let it go? And he goes, are you talking like 50-yard passes? And I go, no, just like, can you throw it as hard as you can? And he said, yeah. And he goes, I can throw full strength. I like the velocity. I like the strength. My motion is good. So I think that's a positive, right? This is all with the backdrop of, he's adamant he'll be ready to go week one, right? When the season goes, he'll be ready. When the season starts, he'll be ready to go. So this is the progression. He started throwing in mid-March. You know, we're about a month into it. Here's where he is. And Andrew Berry added to that, we're taping this Friday morning, Andrew Berry added Thursday that Watson was throwing passes up to 40 yards, right? So that seems pretty significant, right? You're a month in to your throwing routine, and you're throwing at full speed for at least short distances up to 40 yards. I think that's all progress. What's interesting, and I think I assumed that he would be able to practice, or that he would practice some in the OTAs in May and the mini camp in June. And he said that's still under discussion. And he kept listing all these names, right, of people in the medical, or people in the discussions about, you know, the rehab, right? And it's Brown's people, it's his people. He's got people in LA, he's got a trainer in Jacksonville that works with Caleb Williams and Anthony Richardson. So he's got all these people, and they get on these conference calls or these Zooms, and they discuss Deshaun Watson's rehab, and they check in regularly. So he said his doctor out in LA is part of the conservative, was on the conservative side, and thinks that maybe Deshaun Watson should not practice in May and June and wait until July. So I'm sure how the next couple of weeks go could determine that, right? And if he feels great and if there's no setbacks, maybe he does get out there and throw a little bit in OTAs or a little bit in minicamp. But there's a chance we might not see Watson on the field with his other teammates throwing until July in Greenbrier. And, you know, that I think that adds some doubt to the whole rehab process, right? That's a long time to wait. All of a sudden, you're less than 2 months before the season. So we'll have to monitor that. But I think it's interesting that he said that. And then on the whole one, the shoulder broke. You know, Andrew
well,
Berry,
let's hey Scott. Let me interrupt. Let's finish this, and then we'll go to when the injury occurred. So, what fans want to know, all right? And when I say that, I think he talked for about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And I half joke about what I said before about, you know, listening to him. Basically, what it comes down to is that I feel like in that 20 minutes, he said, we're going to take it one day at a time. What would you set the over-under at? Like five, six? I mean, you know, he just keeps saying, we're going to take it day by day, one day at a time, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that's what I mean by that. I felt like, you know, and I feel like he gets kind of a little perturbed a little bit at some of the questions. Like he's annoyed. I get that sense. I don't know if you do. That's just me. But what fans want to know, and a lot of people have read or heard what he said and what Stefanski and Berry have said. What fans want to know, and they want what Scott Petrak can tell them, is this guy going to be ready for game one? Is he going to be on the field when Browns football starts? I don't care about whether he, you know, throws a ball next week.
Sure.
Training camp. What I want to know, is he going to be there for game one?
Well, yeah, and there, he's confident, and Andrew Berry said he's confident that he'll be there week one. So there is that, and I do think that's the bottom line, Chud, but I think it's also important, right? He's never thrown to Jerry Jeudy, right? This is a guy that's only appeared in 12 games over the last 3 years. So practice does matter to some degree, right?
100% agree.
Right.
Yeah.
So I do think those updates matter, but I get your point. And yeah, there's no reason, given what everyone is saying, that he won't be ready week one.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm not trying to belittle the other stuff.
Sure.
I do think that's important. I just wanted, before you got to when he got hurt, I just wanted to really reemphasize that. Not that people don't care about practice.
Right.
Just wanted to know, you know, the game thing. So let's go back. And that was kind of towards the end of his meeting with you guys, right? About the when the injury. Now, do you think that he accidentally put that out there and they went in recovery mode? Or do you think it's okay that we kind of can question now when he got hurt?
Well, I don't think it was by accident that he put it out there. I don't know him well enough to know, you know, what he's thinking, or if he's got, you know, a plan there or whatever. But I think how it came up was, he was talking about how the doctor, Neil, and I don't want to screw up the name, Albatross, or out in LA, the famed doctor that did the shoulder surgery, how he was really impressed that Watson was able to play through the pain And we've been working under the assumption that the broken bone happened against Baltimore, right? Watson's last game. And that's because, that's when he got, that's when he didn't play afterward, right? And he talked about taking a hit. And then Andrew Berry was adamant that it was a new injury and not related to the rotator cuff strain that happened in week three when he took the hit against Tennessee, and that sidelined him for, almost all of four games. So that was the working assumption. And then Watson throws out there that, well, he's impressed that, maybe it was, I was playing with this pain, in that Cardinals game, which was before Baltimore. And then, it's like, well, what are you talking about? You got hurt in the Baltimore game. So what are you talking about the pain in the Arizona game, right? Which had not come up before. So then he got asked, well, did the doctor say, Deshaun, do you know when it got broken? And he said, no. And he goes, you'd have to ask the doctor. Well, but the doctors don't, you can't, it's not like a tree, right? You can't look at, I don't think you can look at the fracture and go, okay, it occurred at this day, right? It would be more a Watson pain, what's he feeling? And he said he didn't know. He got asked if it could have happened as far back as that Tennessee game in week three. And he said possibly. So it created a lot of gray area. And it just doesn't really matter is a when we talk about when he's going to come back, but it may affect how you think about the time he missed, right? If he really did break a shoulder in week three or break a shoulder bone in week three, and then he came back and beat the Cardinals and beat, or tried to play against the Colts and then beat the Cardinals and beat the Ravens, that adds something, right? It looks like he's tougher kind of thing. He did say that he felt the clicking in the shoulder in Baltimore, against Baltimore, right? So, could the bone have been whatever? And I'm just speculating here. Non-displaced, and then it becomes displaced in Baltimore, and then it becomes something you can't play through. I suppose that's possible. Could the medical staff have missed something? I guess that's possible. But Andrew Berry got asked about it yesterday and referred us back to his comments in the fall, which were, this is a new injury. Deshaun was completely healthy coming with the rotator cuff strain when he returned to the lineup against Arizona and even against Baltimore. So that's how the Browns, that's what the Browns are saying. And Watson certainly added some cloudiness to that when he brings up the fact that he may have played in pain against Arizona, could have gone back to week three. That to me was what the confusing part of the interview was.
So I didn't think of it that way. So maybe my first thought was that maybe he accidentally put it out there, but maybe he put it out there on purpose to make himself look a little bit stronger or tougher, like you said. So that's an interesting way to look at it.
That's how I took it. And maybe, again, I don't know that. I don't know his motivation for saying it. But he certainly, if that were true, I think you would look at how the injury is handled differently. Because we know Chud at the beginning of that injury last year, I mean, there were people, he expected to play against the Ravens in Cleveland, and then it was a game day scratch. There was a lot of, why isn't he playing? Did he take himself out? Right. There were questions about his toughness, at least outside the building. And maybe this is still a reaction to that.
All right. That's good take there. Good perspective. That's why people listen, they to get that perspective. So well done there. Two more notes on Watson, just from what I wrote down, and you could comment. And these notes are no mental block and new system.
He was adamant that, some guys struggle coming off injuries mentally, right? You got to get past that hurdle. He was asked directly about it, and he said that's not going to be an issue, and shut it down real quick. Right now, it's good that he feels that way. I guess we actually have to see him get past it and know that it's not a mental hurdle, but he doesn't feel it will be. And then the system, and to me, this is interesting, Chud. When I was writing the story, I put new in quotation marks. Because I don't know how new this system's going to be, right? Kevin Stefanski's still at the head of the offense. But it's a new offense coordinator. It's a new, mostly new offensive coaching staff. So things will be different. I just, and I'll probably not use new in quotation marks the rest of the time I write it. But I thought the first time we really dive into it, because we don't know, we know it's going to be different, right? But we could still have the same play caller. We don't know yet. We don't know that yet. But like Kevin Stefanski's at the top of this org chart in dealing with the offense, right? Yes, Ken Dorsey, the new coordinator, runs the meetings. Yes, he has influence. And yes, they're all combining, you know, the whole staff to put together an offense. But the number one guy remains the same. So I don't know how different it'll look. I know it'll look different to some degree. And again, it could be more three wide receivers. Like I expect to see that. Watson mentioned it'll be more spread. The receivers will have more freedom. He'll have more freedom, more flexibility. You know, some of that is philosophical, right? I don't know if you'll see it on like in formations and play calls. We'll have to see. But he sounded excited about it. You know, he talked about how he loves Alex Van Pelt, the former coordinator. But he referenced Ken Dorsey working with Josh Allen, working with Cam Newton. He said we're similar type quarterbacks. So there's going to be tweaks, and it certainly looks like and sounds like Watson is embracing those changes that Ken Dorsey and Tommy Rees and the rest of that new coaching staff will bring.
But he's going to take it day to day, though, right?
Aren't we all, Chud?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you take things day to day, or do you go hour by hour, week to week? How do you do it?
That's a great question, Chud. I try to take it shot by shot on the golf course. That's how I try to live life. But it's funny. I do try to take it day by day. I'm not going to sidetrack. It's too long. But there are people I work with, right? Media people I work with. And I'm going to give Chris Easterling from the Akabika Journal a shout out. And he All will right. talk about something 4 months down the road, right? Like, yeah, I was looking at hotels for Vegas. I'm like, oh, my God. I said, I can't get past this paragraph I'm trying to write. So I'm much more a day-to-day guy than a let's plan something for the next 6 months.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I find myself to be a combination of both. But I'll tell you, having kids, you have to go day by day because, I mean, you have to be able – this is what I will say. My life is full of audibles.
Right.
It's constant audibles. And if you can't be Bernie Kosar and call the audible, then you can't exist in my world. So
yeah,
that's what I say.
That's a great call.
So, but I also get up at 2:30 in the morning and don't drink coffee. So, you know, there's that, but, anyway, all right, let's move on to, unless you have anything more with Watson and, you know, you could throw some more in there if you want, but, in no certain order, you know, Stefanski, you had mentioned that the play calling, and I don't want to talk about this, just quick cliff note. He still doesn't know who's calling the plays, right?
That's what he
says. He hasn't let us know.
Yeah. And okay. it's beyond let us know. He says he's not made that decision. So
he's not made. All right.
That's what he says.
All right. Okay. And, other one that I thought was interesting is, I don't know if you were the one that asked him, but someone asked him about Vrabel, and that kind of caught my eye.
Yeah, it was not me, but I think it's interesting every time he talks about it. And I feel the need to at least do a note about Vrabel because he's such a big name, right? Obviously, Northeast Ohio connections. But he's such a big presence. So Stefanski is a little cagey about whether or not if Vrabel's actually in the building this week. He said he can still contribute without being in the building. But he said he has been in the building throughout the offseason, or at least parts of the offseason. He did say there, you know, they spent a lot of time talking about how they're going to deal with the new kickoff rules and that Vrabel's been a big part of those discussions. So, you know, I know he's involved in the draft to some degree with Andrew Berry. And then we talk about, okay, how is he also being a consultant to Kevin Stefanski as a coach? And that's part of it. And this is another bright mind trying to figure out how to handle these new kickoff rules, right? And just a quick aside, Andrew Berry said, he thinks the league will have more big bodies because, you know, now most of the players start 5 yards apart and it'll be more like a scrimmage play. So instead of being really important to be out in space, right? And you got corners, you get receivers that run well in space. You're going to have to get off a block. In order to get off a block, you have to have some muscle. You have to have some defensive technique. You'll probably see more linebackers, maybe see a couple defensive ends on the field in the coverage aspect of these kickoffs. And Vrabel's been a part of those talks.
Yeah, the kickoff, that was definitely something that got talked about a lot. And it's kind of – they're admitting no one knows for sure how it's going to go. It's kind of going to – you know, they're going to figure it out as they go kind of thing, Scott?
Yeah, it's just this big unknown. And, you know, I think there's a chance where you see the quote-unquote smarter teams have an edge early. until you see how it actually plays out, right? They have a better idea how it will look, maybe than some other teams. Maybe the best coaching can get you a kickoff return for a touchdown or a big play early before the league adjusts, right? The rest of the league figures out, okay, these are the techniques, these are the schemes you're going to use. So that's what everybody's doing in the offseason, is trying to get that step ahead, that advantage. And Stefanski even said that special teams coordinator Bubba Ventrone has had his helmet on in the field house as they try to figure this stuff out.
All right, yeah. All right, before we get into the draft and any talk on the roster and stuff like that, Nick Chubb, let's get an update on him. Both Barry and Stefanski talked about him.
Yeah, they did. And the update is that he's running on land, right? So that's a step forward. I'm sure that means he was running in the pool / on a treadmill, right? Now it's on land. And he'll continue to ramp up. And it'll be more agility work. You know, stuff that gets you ready for football versus the rehab, right? Let's see if the knees, you know, get the knee in it as close to full strength as possible. Then it becomes more football activities. But he's new to that. It's only within the last week or so that he's been running on land. So we're still a ways away from knowing if and when and how he'll be able to participate in training camp, right? We're not going to see him until then in practice. And then I think that's still a question mark, Judge. So we don't have that answer. You know, I know they keep saying he attacks the rehab, which I get it, right? I understand why they say it. But there's no question about that, right? We knew Nick Chubb would attack this rehab. The question is, how's the knee going to respond? And we just don't know that yet. I think there's guarded optimism among the Browns, right? They say he's aggressively progressing, or however they termed it. But we just won't know yet if and when he's going to be available.
Yeah. All right. Should we move on to the draft and the roster, or you got anything else before we hit that?
Real quick on Greg Newsom.
Newsom.
Yeah. I went to he was at a Berea Mid-Park girls flag football practice. So we went and talked to him. And because he's been out there and his name's been in trade rumors in the offseason, wanted to get his opinion. Then we got Andrew Berry's opinion on Thursday. And Newsom wants to stay, right? He said he's able to ignore the noise. It's not affecting him. He's comfortable with himself. He thinks the team's comfortable with him. He wants to be here. He goes, from day one, he goes, I wanted to be drafted by a team and stay the entire time. Now, we'll see if that happens. But for the immediate point, right, for the immediate future, I don't think he's going anywhere. And Andrew Berry said, hey, you play three corners so much in this league, right? It's three receivers, three corners. You need to have three good corners. And at Bronzefield, they have that with Denzel Ward, Martin Emerson Jr., and Greg Newsom. He goes, we like to play press man. We have three guys that can do it at a high level. We're not looking to give that away, right? I think he said we're not looking to give that skill set away. Andrew Berry said that, which means they're not just going to trade him to trade him. And I don't think they're going to get a huge, like, trade offer for Newsom, which is why I've said all along, I think he stays. Because that position, his skill set, his talent is too valuable to hand to give away. And I don't think they will. And I think Newsom will stay for sure in 2024. I think, and he's not making, you know, he's making hardly any money. He's on the, you know, fourth year of his rookie contract. And then I think by May 2nd, the Browns pick up the fifth-year option. It's worth $13.77 million for 2025. And that gives them some time to figure out if they can afford to keep all three corners. And they might not be able to, right? That's that's the backdrop here, is they probably can't pay all three corners. But they can pay them through 2025, I think. And I'd expect them to pick that up. I'd expect them to keep Newsom for 2024 and then decide how they're going to work out any long-term deal. Does Martin Emerson Jr. get one, or does Greg Newsom II get one? I assume only one of them will get one to go along with Denzel Ward, and then they'll have to figure it out. But I don't think there's any rush to get rid of Greg Newsom, because financially it makes sense to keep him at least for the short term.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought him up specifically. I had that in my thoughts to ask you about when Barry spoke. That was very intriguing to me when he said, hey, listen, defenses, whether you're 3-4 or 4-3, you're barely really ever in that the entire game. And it's become a league where you're, like you said, three cornerbacks and three wide receivers on the field most of the time. I thought that was very interesting and entertaining to listen, not entertaining, but insightful to listen to.
Yeah, I agree. And that's, you can see that in the personnel piece. So many people talk about drafting a linebacker, and they could do that, right? But you only play one or two linebackers most of the game, right? So that position is diminished. And with that being diminished, then your nickel corners, your nickel safeties, those guys get more emphasized.
Yeah. So what's your expertise? Break it down how he really feels about not having a number one pick for the third year in a row, because that was asked of him. And I mean, here we go. We're heading into our third draft in a row without a first round pick.
That's a great question, Sean. I think you'd always want to have it, right? And that's what these personnel departments live for. And I'm not sure I believe him when he says there's the same amount of excitement inside the building during the draft. There's certainly not the same amount of excitement outside the building. And we've talked about that, right? Fans can't get hyped because 54 is so much different than 24. It just is, let alone a top five or top 10 pick. I believe they still put in the same amount of work. I believe the scouts do what they're scouting. They do the scouting. I believe they have all the meetings, all that. But I don't believe that the feeling is the same when you're picking at 54 and not in the first round. So I think that's part of it. So they would always want one, right? And they know how valuable that asset is. It is. Barry talked about, it's a lottery ticket. And what he meant by that is, there's a crapshoot element to the draft period, and that includes in the first round. But he did say, it's a really good lottery ticket, right? You can get a big time player in that first round, and the odds are just less that you're going to get the same type of player in the second round, and it holds up as you go through the draft. So they do miss, he said, I wouldn't say we miss it on a Thursday or Friday of the draft. I think they do miss having that. He said he's looking forward to having one again in 2025. But the balance to that is the roster is better than it was when they traded for Deshaun Watson. And it's not because of Deshaun Watson, right? Because he's only played, 11 plus games. It's because Andrew Berry has found talent in different vehicles. And whether it's drafting Martin Emerson Jr. in the third round, DeJuan Jones in the fourth round, trading for Amari Cooper, trading for Jerry Jeudy, trading for Za'Darius Smith, signing Dalvin Tomlinson, right? He's been able to find players and talent without having that first round pick. And maybe that's harder, but he's been able to do it. And I think that's why he feels pretty good that, Mary Kay asked the question, have you weathered the storm? And I think the answer is yes, that they've weathered the storm without the first round picks. And that's through some good draft picks and some good work acquiring veterans.
Yeah, true point there. How are we looking with pre-draft visits?
Yeah, I mean, you're allowed 30. And some people call top 30 visits, and that's a misnomer. You're allowed 30 visits pre-draft. And he said they used more than normal this year. He didn't give a final number, but it wasn't 30. But yeah, I think you have to be careful, Chud, about reading, not you, just in general, about reading too much into who's here. Sometimes it matters. Sometimes it's a direct correlation to who they draft, and you'll talk to a guy on draft day, and he's like, oh yeah, I was in the building 3 weeks ago, right? Sometimes it's used to eliminate guys. Andrew Berry said, hey, sometimes we have to ask guys about behavioral issues, or we want a full day with them on the chalkboard or on the whiteboard, right? So are they picking up what we're telling them, and then they still recall it hours later, right? That kind of thing. So sometimes it's eliminate guys. Sometimes it's for 4 years later, you want to have a feel for a guy when he becomes a free agent. Right, they've had a couple quarterbacks in. I doubt that they draft a quarterback, but it's part of your due diligence as an organization. So it's interesting because then there'll be guys that they draft that will say they had little contact with the Browns and didn't expect them to be picked. Right, so I was actually talking to a local prospect yesterday, and he said he hadn't talked to the Browns. Maybe he talked to a scout. There's a scout at his pro day, but he really hadn't had a whole lot of conversation with them. And I said, you can't really read too much into that. Sometimes it means something, sometimes it doesn't. So that's why this draft is so unusual. Maybe they think, hey, there's no chance we get this player. He winds up being there, and then they just rely on their actual scouting reports, right? As opposed to having done a lot of interviews personally with the kid lately. So, yeah, but that's why they use the visits. And it's interesting because, you know, when you have the top pick and the quarterbacks are coming in, there's a ton of buzz. You know, when it's, you know, picks down the line, it doesn't get the same attention.
What else did you get out of these meetings with Barry and Stefanski that helps you get ready for the draft next week? Anything?
I did think, you know, when Barry talks about his philosophy, and I think I lose sight of it sometimes. I think a lot of people do, is it's not just about, and even, you know, we're, and this is not a knock on these guys, but, you know, when you talk to some of the top draft analysts, right, the TV guys, the Kuipers and Jeremiah's, especially Kuiper, when he does his mocks, it's a lot about filling need, right? And when I analyze a draft afterward, a lot of it's about, okay, did they fill this need? Because it's easy to see a need and it's easy to match it with the player. But that doesn't mean it's always the best pick, right? And it's not all about need right now. And I think that's a point that Andrew Berry emphasized to us is we think, they think, he's, I was, the we was him talking. They think about, you know, how this roster is going to look in 1, 2, 3, 4 years, right? So, and to me, I took it as, but they look at their roster right now, and they don't have a whole lot of young guards, right? And they have a young backup center in Luke Whippler, but you know, he hasn't played much. And they have three older players across the interior: Joe Bitonio, Wyatt Teller, Ethan Posick. So, would it make sense to draft a guard or a center? I think yes, and it would be less about 2024 because you trust those three guys up front. It would be more about down the road. Can we draft a guy? It's Andrew Berry would think. And could you draft a guy now and have him ready to play in 2026, right? Ready to step into a starting role. And that's part of the process that I think can be overlooked, right? It's not all about right now, especially with the philosophy of a lot of rookies aren't ready to contribute, right? And luckily for the Browns, their roster's in a place where they probably don't need a lot of rookies to come in and contribute. It's more about big picture. And I often lose sight of that. And when I do my mock draft, I'll probably lose sight of it again, right? Because I think, okay, yes, they need a number two tight end. They probably need another receiver. But if they look and say, hey, in 2 years, maybe we could use another linebacker to pair with JOK or a safety to replace Juan Thornhill or whatever, that's more in their thinking. And I'm not sure every organization does that, but I know the Browns do. Because they are guys that look down the road and they plan. And the same thing comes to trading down, right? We talk so much about trading down, and obviously they traded up, they traded down, they've done everything. But their core belief is the more picks, the better, because these are lottery tickets, right? There is a crapshoot element to the draft that I think we always have to keep that in the back of your mind, that they believe volume is one way to win the draft. And if given the option, I think they're more likely than not to trade down, you know, and at some point it probably stops, right? Trading down to the fourth round or the fifth round. But at number 54, I think they're more inclined to trade down, certainly than to trade up, and maybe even than to sit at number 54.
Okay. Do you feel we're good on the draft and all that, and we can just get back into that next week?
Yes, sir.
All right, we'll do that because I was gonna pick your brain about what you think they'll do. Will they trade? Will they do? But let's save that for next week and give people something to look forward to because they'll give you some time too, being that you know you're shot by shot, day by day. This gives you a few a
Love
few
it.
more days to think about what you want to say next week.
Love it. Yeah, I think we're good. I mean, we'll talk. Yeah, we could talk before the draft because they're not going to make a draft pick until who knows, right? 9 o'clock on Friday night. So we're not going to talk about the draft. We're not going to talk about their picks next week. So we got plenty of time to talk about. And I'm working on some feature stories. I'll do a little mock. I'll do you know, some position graphics with the positions I think they might address. So we can talk about that heading into the draft.
All right. I just got two more things for you quickly. Number one, I saw that picture with Rashard Higgins and Christian Kirksey and the media there when they became members of the Browns to retire.
Yeah, that's been it's become a tradition that Dan Murphy, one of the PR guys, longtime PR guy, when they bring in a former player, and it was Joe Hayden last year. I think that was last year. It was Phil Dawson, whenever Phil Dawson was here. We did it when Joe Thomas retired. Take like a picture of the people that covered him. And you know, it's a little nostalgic. I try to suck in the gut as much as I can to stand up next to those guys, but it's a nice memory because you know you do cover these guys and you get to know them. You know, I mean, I haven't seen Christian Kirksey in a while. He walks back, you know, gives me a big handshake when he gets there. You spend a lot of time with these guys. It's nice to reconnect. You know, I thought that was interesting that it meant enough to these two guys, and they're not like, I mean, they're not Ring of Honor guys in Browns history, right? But they were fan favorites. They had an impact. Christian Kirksey was a multiple time captain. He was a Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee. Like, he left an imprint on this organization, and it was nice to have them come back. And it meant something for them, as symbolic as it is, to sign a one-day contract and retire with the Browns.
You know, we buried the lead and we should have come out with this next thing first, right?
What's that?
I mean, what have we not talked about?
My gosh, what am I
Some
missing? What am I missing, Todd?
something with the Browns this
Oh my
week.
gosh, the face masks.
That's right.
Oh my God, thanks for remembering that, Chud. Shows you where I prioritize uniforms in my thinking.
Well, you need to step up your game, man, because that's a big reaction from the fan base.
I know, I do have to pay more attention to that. Not pay more attention, I guess give it, I don't know, give it more meaning. Well, let me ask you, what'd you think about the change?
I mean, honestly, the first thing I thought about was, oh, what color were they last year?
Right? Chud, I actually wrote they went away from the gray face masks, and then I started to think about it. I'm like, I don't know if they were for sure. I know they wore gray from time to time. So I had to go look, and they were brown. And
They were brown.
I had no idea. Honest to God, I had
Yeah.
no idea that they were brown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, listen, I'm always for anything that makes them look like the 80s with Bernie.
Yeah.
I know I'm in the minority here. My favorite Browns uniforms are white on white. Because that's, I mean, remember they wore white on white for home games in the late
Yeah.
80s.
Yeah, that's
And
interesting.
I know I'm in the minority there. Everyone likes the Browns jerseys more. Not everyone, but a lot of people. But so I don't, but listen, I didn't want to spend a lot of time on it, but I definitely thought it was something to bring up. I don't get into all that as much as most people do, because I mean, some, like I said, I forgot what they were last year. So
Right.
but I do see though where it is of interest and why fans care. I get it.
Yeah, and you know, I think they probably do look cleaner, like people like to say. You know, there's something about them, but again, like that's not something I notice on a day-to-day basis. You know, just uniforms in general. Like, I think some are really bad. And remember when, I don't know how long ago it was, 10 years ago when they had those new uniforms and they made a big deal about it down at the convention center, and Joe Thomas modeled them. And I remember like people from Nike breaking
Oh,
it
I was
down, and they
there.
wound up being
Yep.
awful, right? And then they wound up being terrible. So you could tell when a uniform's terrible.
Yep.
And you could tell, like, in teams will run on the field. Like, if the Cowboys are wearing their dark blue jerseys and silver pants, like, I think that's a really sharp look. And maybe it's the Lions or the Giants. Like, there's some classic looks, and the team runs on the field on Sunday, and I'll look to Tom Weathers next to me and be like, yeah, those are good looking uniforms. But it's not something I obsess about at all. It lasts about 5 minutes, you know, in my thought process. But I know there's a part of the fan base that just eats it up. So good for them. I think this certainly, the move by the organization certainly plays into the what the fans want. I think a segment of the fan base wanted the white face mask. So good for them. It's just not something that I personally get amped up about.
Yeah, but you bring up Tom Withers. That makes me think of the days we did the pregame huddle at the stadium
Oh, that was
back on
fun, buddy.
Shannon.
Yeah,
Those
it was a good
were
time
fun,
back then.
man. Can you believe this? You and I have been talking Browns football since 2007.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
Yeah, I
maybe
can't believe it.
2008. May have been 2008,
Wow. How
but
about that?
yeah. How
Getting
about
old,
that?
Chud. Getting
Yep.
old.
But I'm done talking for today. It's time to take a nap and move on to the weekend, and we'll talk again next week.
Yes, we will. Thanks again, Chud. As always, enjoy your weekend. Thanks everybody for listening. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks a lot.